once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
Oh, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. And evidently there were actually boys and girls listening last hour. My six-year-old was commenting to me about the radio program as during the break. So
I've told you all these years that boys and girls do listen to this.
I would have imagined during all that time that somebody was being strapped to a chair and being held down to listen to two boring guys talk on a Saturday morning. But
well, there are precocious boys and girls. And actually, of course, that harks back to my childhood.
When you were precocious? Now you're just
when
cautious?
When I listened to the radio and the announcer would say, "Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls."
Right. And so you would imagine the masked man instead of seeing the masked man.
Yes.
Right. So all of you out there can imagine us being masked at this. Wait, no, everybody goes around masks these days. Yeah, it's just despoiled the whole vision of the Lone Ranger. Who was that masked man? I don't know. Everybody's masked these days.
I walked into a bank. I think I may have told you this. I walked into a bank a while back and I walked in. Everybody had a mask on. I had my mask on. And I said, you know what's really funny is a couple of years ago, if I walked into a bank with a mask on, you'd call the police. Now, if I walk into a bank without a mask on, you tell me to leave.
Right. Pardon me,
sir. And if I won't leave, you call the police.
You're going to need to leave this bank until you cover your face so we can't recognize you.
Right, exactly. I think.
Oh, yeah, irony.
That's the way it works.
Irony.
Oh, irony.
But indeed. Irony keeps us from getting wrinkles.
It does?
Just think about it a second.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll work on that.
Maybe smile lines?
Yes. Maybe smile lines. That would work. Well, it all depends on whether the irony is a pun or not.
Yeah, a pun is upon us. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you don't really get laugh lines from puns.
No. You get moan lines from puns.
Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to contact us, presuming that today is December 18th of the year 2021, and that makes this a live program, you can certainly do so by sending us an email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com or both, preferably, and we will address whatever it is that you ask us about in the email.
I have a subject to speak about. The U.S. top financial regulators, and this includes top at the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve, the Financial Stability Oversight Council, or FSOC, which is the preferred term for them, FSOC, have all talked about a kind of cryptocurrency recently as being dangerous. Well, of course, right? We talk about cryptocurrencies being dangerous all the time on this program. But they're talking about cryptocurrencies that would normally, if you were asking most of the stockbrokers and so on, be what would be considered the least dangerous. Something called stable coins. Stable coins are a kind of cryptocurrency that is linked to the value of the U.S. government's dollar.
I don't think there is riskless as they were advertised to be, because they recently, several of them recently had to restate the fact that they didn't have dollars backing the coins.
Right. And that's the point, is that the U.S. regulators are saying, wait, this stable coin, these stable currencies look like money markets without any reserves. It looks like they're trying to just match the dollar. One share equals $1. Well, that's a money market fund. We know what those are. And they're saying, we need to regulate this. And it's not just because there's problems in the event that, like, if interest rates rise really quickly, you could have your stable coin not be as valuable as a dollar, like a lot less valuable, possibly. But also because of something we were talking about at the end of last hour. We were talking about Russia and interest rate hikes and 7 this year and what's going on over there. And what's more, they're massing on the border with Ukraine. And our president talked to their president this over this last week, saying, hey, if you invade Ukraine, we're pulling out all the stops. And by that, he meant he's not pulling out all the stops. He's pulling out all the financial stops, the nuclear option. And by that, he didn't actually mean nuclear weapons, but rather taking them off the SWIFT trading system, the monetary trading system, where it allows banks to know when they're about to receive good transfers and when they're about to send good transfers. It speeds up the system. Well, one of the issues is that we've suspended Iran from that system. They're not on the SWIFT system. And yet somehow the Chinese and the Russians are still able to buy oil from Iran. So is North Korea. Well, what are they buying it in? It's still dollar denominated. Guess. You want to give a guess?
What do dollars.
You, it's dollar denominated, but they're doing it in stable coins.
Really?
Yeah. So the Chinese are buying oil from Iran using stable coins that they don't allow to be traded in their country. Just like when they buy with dollars that they don't allow to be traded in their country. So just keep that in mind when we're talking about stable coins, cryptocurrencies that you would think these have the least risk because they're so structurally sound and they just stay to the dollar. Number one, there's concerns because they don't have reserves backing them. What gives them that value other than people just saying, yeah, this is the value they are? And number two, it's an increasingly used method to transfer money from one country to another without having to go through foreign exchange or through the international kind of regulatory policing that takes place to make sure that there's not international law being broken. So that's a lot to unpack right there. The fact that something that it's actually being used for the purpose it was designed for, but because it's not regulated, bad guys are doing it too. So just from a side note, by the way, I was at a conference, a virtual conference over the last several weeks. And one of the things that repeatedly was brought up as a, I'm going to put air quotes around this, good financial solution to get money to clients faster. And this hopefully will cause your remaining hair to fall out and your dark hair to what little of it that's left to turn white.
I think I know what you're going to say.
They're encouraging clients to convert to a stable coin and then unconvert on the other end of the transaction at another bank. So if you think about that for a second, if you've got $1 million sitting in a bank and you want to move it to another bank, there may be a month where you can't touch that money, where the second bank is waiting to verify that the money was real. Versus if you put it in a stable coin at one bank and then take it out of the stable coin at the other bank, you have a near instantaneous transaction. And a lot of these experts are saying this is a great idea. The problem is that during the period that it is a stable coin, you're subject to the lack of reserves of that stablecoin and the lack of transparency of that stablecoin and the fact that those things get hacked regularly and the money disappears. I mean, we had one this week and the billions of dollars and people, it's not even a big enough deal that it's making headlines anymore.
You know, John asked us about the SWIFT system last week.
Right.
And if you've got a bank that is sitting on the money for a month on $1 million transfer,
they're not on the SWIFT system.
You're using the wrong bank. Yeah. That's just, you know, maybe a couple of days, but
well, it's a week is normal.
It'd be a couple of days.
A week is normal, but even that, the Federal Reserve has been working on this. We just got informed. The Federal Reserve was saying by the end of the year they would have the ability to do these same day transfers. That's not happened. Not even close. But we were just informed this month that automatic clearinghouse transactions, those are the ACH transfers that use the routing number on your checks. The limit on how much can be moved around in a normal setting has been capped for a long time at around $100,000. Well, there's a big bunch of big investment firms that have just raised that to $500,000 to move around quickly. So steps are being made to incorporate the technology that's supposed to be great about the stablecoins into real money. And once the real money has all those features, please be aware that stablecoins and other cryptocurrencies, one of the big draws to them is are the very features that are being replicated in real money now. So at some point, that collapse, we both agree on this, is coming, and it will be damaging because this is the way it's happened throughout history.
Well, the Federal Reserve is investigating setting up a stablecoin for money transfer.
Well, federally
backed. Yeah, well, this is the point.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
And the point is that the existing stablecoins are not backed by dollars. They were thought to be backed by dollars. They're not backed by dollars. And that tells you something, the fact that their claim to credibility is they're backed by dollars. Now they have some huge fees built in. Believe me, it isn't free to do these things. But the point is, if you're afraid that Bitcoin, people think Bitcoin is going to replace the dollar, something's going to replace the dollar, it's good to remember that stablecoins were bragging about the fact that they had dollars on hand. In other words, the dollar continues to be, even backing the cryptocurrencies,
the thing that's supposed to replace the dollar. Right, exactly.
And throughout the world, and eventually all things, I suppose, come to an end, and we should be prepared for the fact that eventually, I say be prepared, I don't know what's going to happen. The Roman denarius worked really, really well and was a stable coin that held the empire together for about 1,000 years. I think that probably would be a nice thing to beat.
1,000 years is a good time. The dollar
right now is serving the same role as the denarius did for about 1,000 years in the Roman Empire. And that is that it stabilizes the world's transactions. It makes us all very happy, and it increases prosperity all over the globe. And I know it's really fun, depending on whether your guy's in office or somebody else's office, to denigrate the United States economy and denigrate the dollar and beat up on it. And people overseas like to do it, and some people here in the United States like to do it. But let me say, we have the most stable, dependable currency on the planet. It's just that simple. We have the most stable, dependable government for all its warts and pimples, and we have the most stable, dependable system. The Chinese think that we're really stupid because we've had 800,000 people die of COVID, and they've only had about 6,000 so far, because they're shutting down their economy every time they get a whiff of COVID someplace. We made the choice to do that, and that's the way we work here in the United States. We would rather have literally 1 million people die than do lockdowns. Whether you like that or not, it has produced the leading economy in the world, and we're going like gangbusters while everybody else is trying to get back on their feet again. There's a lot good going on in the United States, and I'm really proud to be here, and it's just a simple fact, and I realize it's very unpopular at this point to be patriotic and proud to be here. Proud to be here under whatever president gets elected.
Right. I just had a message the other day on this subject from somebody who said, listen to the radio program, and they said that he just thought we were anti-Obama until Trump came in, and then he just thought we were anti-Trump until Biden came in, and now he realized that we're equal opportunity anti, but now he's also recognizing the compliments that we've given to Obama, Trump, and Biden in the process. We try to throw the concept of what party somebody's in out the window. It may allow us, if we're thinking about what party they're in, to figure out what they're trying to accomplish and so on. But the reality is, we want to look at what is the agenda, what is the thing that's trying to happen, and how does that fit in our economy? Not how does it fit into the voting polls, but how does it actually impact businesses? How does it impact employment? And the vast, I can't say that word, it's such a short word for such a big thing. The vast majority of stuff that presidents do have no lasting impact and no short-term impact on the economy. They get a lot of credit and a lot of blame, but it's real, folks. I mean, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is like the crowning achievement of the Trump administration, lowered taxes. It did change the economy. But we're pretty sure when you look at the numbers on the economy, the effect of the change took place after he was out of office, the majority of it. And that's the way it works with almost all presidents. It takes a long time to steer the Titanic. So we had stimulus during Bush, during the Great Recession. We had stimulus from Obama during the Great Recession. And depending on who you liked at the time and who you didn't like, you could blame one or the other for the recession. When it, man, we could spend hours just talking on this subject, that the president doesn't have the ability to retroactively change the economy. And that's really what you need to do to change employment. We tell this repeatedly to people over the years. Employment is what we call a lagging indicator. The reality is that if you're an employer, you don't say, I'm wondering next month, you know, today's a record-breaking good month. We've been doing so great. We're making profits like we've never seen before. But I don't know what's happening next month, so I'm going to lay my employees off. That's not how it works. You tend to have a lag where you've been making record profits and then the profits start slipping and they keep slipping. And the last thing you want to do is lay off your employees, because these are the ones that were giving you the record-breaking stuff a year ago or however long before it was. Employment is a lagging indicator. If a new president comes in, they've just been elected. It doesn't matter if it's Obama, Trump. It doesn't matter if we're talking Biden or Bush or... If they've just been elected, they cannot go back in time and give profits back before they were elected to people to keep them from laying people off. Does this make sense to you? And then even if they do say, let's do a program to get money out to the employers, well, then you got to go through Congress and you're going to take months to get that law passed. And then you got to go through the regulators that try to figure out where the money comes from to pay these, whatever the stimulus is or whatever they're trying to do, and how it gets released to different people. You know, the SBA loans that were a big deal last year.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands upon thousands of applications that went in March that have not been issued money at this point. And that's what I mean. It takes a long time to steer the Titanic. Even if you get your application in, if you didn't hire a bunch of people at the SBA to handle the influx of applications, it's going to take a while. And I'm getting down to little details, but those little details, even if they're not exactly the same details, they're everywhere. And this is vitally important for people that get so wrapped up in the religion of politics that they can't hear good coming from either side. During the pandemic, the child tax credit checks have been shown to have prevented a lot of kids from being in like mild starvation mode. Weird. So is that something that we like on the conservative end of the spectrum? Should money just be given out to people? Well, it's a big question, because we have a socialized public school system. We all say, hey, kids should be able to read and the government will pay for that. Well, I think eating and reading, if you were going to weigh the priority between the two, I think the same people that say, I want to hire educated employees so I will help pay for their employment would say, I want to hire people that have good health because they've been eating decently their whole life as employees too. So is that socialism? And this comes back to something we've talked about, China, and I kind of want your input to this, but this is important for people to realize. China doesn't have a social security system. They don't have a safety net for their retirees, for the people, and they are a communist government. They are all about socialism, but they don't have that. So in this area of our economy, which is a pretty large chunk of our economy. We're more socialist, more communist than they are. So when you're looking at it from a political spectrum, what I just said would cause a lot of people to get really upset at me. It would cause the progressive liberal side to go, no, that's not true. We need to get more communist. And it would cause the conservatives to go, no, we're not communists here. That's the CCP over in China. If you throw out the political rhetoric and just look at the nature of government, you'll see that we have a Frankensteinian, capitalistic, socialistic system, and so does everybody else on the planet. It's just how much socialism and how much capitalism. There's some mix of it there. I don't think, I could be wrong here, I don't think that there are any members of Congress in the House or the Senate that would come out on record right now saying they want to cancel Social Security. Can you imagine any of them doing that right now?
Not and survive very long.
Right. That's socialism. We all agree that's socialism. It's in the name, Social Security. And yet, if those same representatives are asked if they consider themselves socialist or capitalist, they get a lot of flack for giving any quibble on that, to say, well, some version of both. Oh, he must be a crazy progressive, or she must be a crazy progressive. Just speaking the truth gets you labeled as something that's not true. So this is, I know politics touch on the economy a lot, and we get a lot of this, and we're long enough from any election at this point that we can kind of talk about this without too much hurt feelings. The closer you are to an election, the more you say politics is irrelevant, causes people's blood pressure to rise. Because it's not irrelevant. It's just irrelevant short-term on the economy.
You know, there's a while back, Lynn Woolley, for those of you who are listening who are not in Central Texas, is a local radio host who's on the conservative side, to say the least. And he had me, I guess both of us were on his radio show when I did this.
Yeah.
And I asked him if he was a socialist, and he says, because he was being anti-socialist, and he says no. Because, by the way, he had called me a rhino, or a Republican name only.
Yeah.
And I said, so if you're anti-socialist, then you should be preaching do away with Medicare and Social Security immediately, because those are both socialist, purely socialist activities. And he decided to break for commercials, and during commercials he chewed me out very thoroughly and said, this is my radio show. I ask the questions. You respond.
Yeah.
We haven't been back since for some reason.
Well, we still love him. I think he still loves us.
I haven't heard from him in a long time.
But it's a statement of whether you're Republican or Democrat is less important than what's actually happening. And when you look at what's actually happening, we have a system that is a great mix of all. You know, if you look at pure capitalism, dog eat dog, well, that's not real either. Adam Smith is the father of capitalism, and he never said everybody's allowed to just slaughter each other in the pursuit of profit. He said, when you leave someone alone to pursue their interests, their own interests, so long as it does not impede the interests of those around them, the whole society is lifted as if by an invisible hand. Well, Marx, on the other end, was saying, well, you just take from the wealthy and you give to the needy, from each according to merit, to each according to need. Those two statements aren't that far apart. And that's hard because politics have made them polarized. It's weird, but the reality is that if you have a family that includes children, you live in a commune. Unless you force your child to go to work to pay for their toys. It is actually one of the most beautiful forms of existence, as long as everybody's a volunteer. Where it breaks down is where it's mandated. When you're mandated communism, then you're not a volunteer. And this is something I've studied for years, looking at the communes in the United States, including the Shakers. The inventors of the circular saw, as we know it, were the Shakers. Great furniture made by them. It was a commune. And during the first generation, when they were all volunteering to be there, it worked magnificently. During the second generation, where kids have grown up there and been there, but they kind of knew what their parents went through to volunteer to be part of this amazing new thing. It still functioned and actually prospered more. But by the time it got to the third generation, people that were born knowing that they really didn't have to do anything and they would be given whatever they needed, it fell apart because not enough people were volunteering to do the work. So when people say communism doesn't work, you have to say on what scale, because it works great in a family unit. It is, in fact, what the American right holds dear about the family unit is that it's a little commune. And the word commune, it means to be together, to lean on each other. And if you think of what a corporation is, yes, there are people working in the corporation, but how the corporation takes care of its own is semi-communistic. So it comes to the scale and length of time and all of that. Getting this out, I don't think, is going to change the way people think about politics. When I'm saying this on the air, when we have a podcast on this, I don't think I'm changing anybody's mind. But I am hopefully pointing out a little piece of life that we can comfortably have a very wrong idea about. That it's the other guy's fault. It is great for us psychologically, by the way, when we look at the studies on this. People that can't, number one, have someone to thank for all good things, and number two, have someone to blame for all bad things, they tend to be happier in their day-to-day life. How's that for weird? It doesn't mean they're more successful, but they are happier. And there's my behavior in politics and economics mixed into a big pot and come out as a gumbo that I don't think anybody wants to eat. But I bet you've got something to talk about next.
Well, I want to talk about the fact that the United States economy is still growing nicely.
Oh, massively. Yeah, that's a fantastic subject change.
We had a really decent rise in retail spending. It was 0.8% seasonally adjusted, which doesn't sound like much. Between October and November to November. In other words, November's increase in retail spending was 0.8%. Now, you run that out over a year, though, and it becomes some significant numbers. That's not the big number. People are saying, oh, only 8%. Well, when we get into December, we're going to see it higher. We'll see a bigger jump. People were hesitating to spend a little bit, and they've been spreading the spending out. The important number, these are not published numbers. You have to go back and look at the tables and dig them out. The important number is that retail spending in November of this year in the United States was 22% higher than it was in November of 2019. You have to go back 2 years to see what's going on. Why do you have to go back 2 years? Well, because 2020 doesn't really count.
Yeah, and we did a lot of stuff that didn't do anything in 2020. Like people stopped buying stuff, driving places, got laid off lots. Yeah.
And they had lots of stimulus coming in. So it was just an unusual situation in 2020.
Yeah.
You have to go back to 2019 when things were supposedly normal. We're up 22%. Now let me put this in. We assume people know this, but it's important to recognize that the United States economy, the gross domestic product of the United States, is approximately 2/3 composed of consumer spending, retail spending. That's not true of other countries, and other countries suffer greatly because they don't have that as a fact. And I realize that means we import a lot of stuff because our economy is not driven by exports. Germany's economy, Deutschland's economy, is driven by exports.
Same with China.
The European economy is driven by exports. China's economy is driven by exports. Japan's economy is driven by export. A lot of those exports are, by the way, to us. But we have this tremendous advantage in that we drive our own economy. Yeah, we have supposedly a balance of trade issue where we spend more money buying things from other people than we get from selling things to other people. But that is not factual. It is not true. We really do not have a balance of trade issue at all. Could we get one eventually? Probably. But for 40 years, we've had this horrible balance of trade issue that was going to bankrupt us within 5 years. Instead, we are the wealthiest country on the planet with the largest economy on the planet 40 years later, and we have grown exponentially and far better than the people who supposedly were going to benefit by doing all the exports, which should tell you something about the issue of whether exports are important or not. Sure, we got to have exports. There's a nice balance. In fact, we do have a positive export ratio, and I really don't have time to go into that. It takes quite a while to explain that. But we actually export more than we import, and we sell more things across the world than we buy, which is why our wealth is growing.
And I can give a quick statement on that. The way we measure imports and exports, if we're having something made in China, but that was designed in the United States, whether that's clothing or an iPhone, or it doesn't matter what it is, the iPhone was not exported to China so that it could be manufactured and brought back. The idea of what the iPhone was, the design for the iPhone, was exported for China. What's the value of that? Well, it doesn't have a value. It's just it's a document that went across. Well, now we're importing millions upon millions of iPhones from China. So that looks like we have an import issue here. We're not exporting and we've got this big import. The reality is that the value of the intellectual property was the same value as all that stuff we imported. Kind of by definition. That's just how it works. So you have a balance that's even there. We made it somewhere else, and we paid the hourly wages of the people that were manufacturing it, but whose shareholders benefited from the profit? Where was the benefit in the profit for that strange export-import unbalanced issue that's not as unbalanced as it looks? Another way to look at this, and it's difficult, but not so difficult. If we have iron that we import from Syria, we're not importing iron from Syria, by the way. There's not a whole lot coming from Syria right now. But we got iron, came from Syria. We turn it into steel. We ship it to Mexico and say this is Ford doing it. They ship it to Mexico to turn it into a part in a Ford plant. And then the part is shipped back up to Detroit where it's put into an automobile. And then the automobile is shipped back to sell to Mexico. Well, if all the parts were made in Mexico, this is one of those weird things. Parts, when added all up, are more expensive than the automobile. If you look at the individual price of the part and you add it all up, you could buy two or three cars that are already manufactured with that. Because the individual pricing is done kind of retail rather than wholesale. And Ford's not actually buying those parts. They just paid for the manufacturing of those parts. So do we have a balance of trade issue with Mexico?
No.
No. Because we just paid them to make something that we provided all of the ingredients for, and they just put it together and shipped it back to us. So this is part of the problem with those import-export statistics. We don't have a good way of doing it. These statistics were set up in the 1920s.
There's also the fact that we export something that doesn't count. It's not counted as an export.
Dollars.
Dollars is something we manufacture and back. We have a lifetime warranty on them. And we take care of our product very, very well. And as a result, it is used as world reserve currency. Does it have to be used as world reserve currency? No. The euro could be used. However, since the Europeans decided not to have a constitution, and Greece and Italy both have threatened the stability of the euro, people are a little bit hesitant to use euros as the world reserve currency. A lot hesitant. The Russians would love the ruble to be used, but that's probably not going to happen too.
And the euro, when even in the golden age of the eurozone and the European Union, the age when the UK was like, we want to be part of this, they still didn't take up the currency shift. They stayed on the pound. They didn't go to the euro because they didn't trust Italy and Greece, just like we don't.
The Chinese certainly have enough renminbi in circulation, or yuan. It's called both things. they could be, supply a world currency. But here's the interesting thing. What backs the Chinese currency? And what backs the Chinese currency is the dollar. Why is it, why don't they use their GDP to back their currency? Because their GDP may not be, well, we, the way they figure GDP is really simple. They ask the political party ruling a local entity, what profit did you make in a, in the last year or in the last quarter? And the political party says, we made this much profit. And then that gets compiled together at the district level and gets compiled all the way up. And they say, that's our GDP. It's kind of like asking the Democrats or the Republicans to set the GDP based on their party's desire in each county across the country and then compile that into states and then send it up. And I don't know that it would be particularly reliable.
Are you saying there might be some bias there? That, that somebody there might definitely kind of change the numbers? What? Why would that be? What? How? Well,
whoever was in power would want the GDP to look better, and when they were out of power, they would want the GDP to look worse. And so, what we'd wind up is a massively the other thing is that there's some people, and they're a very small minority, thank God, who think we should use gold as our backing of our currency and backing of the world. The problem is there is literally, and I mean literally, not enough gold on the planet or in the asteroids to back the world economy. It's just not enough.
Yeah, you need a constantly growing supply in order to, let me kind of explain that. If you start a new business that's never existed before, it's never been there before, you're making something that nobody's ever had before, whether that's some kind of gadget or whatever, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're making that's never been part of anybody's budget, and we can go back and say 2006, 2007, the iPhone came out, nobody had a smartphone. We all put it in our budget. In the middle of the Great Recession, a lot of us went out and bought something we didn't have before. Where did we come up with the money to do that? If there's a new business, you have to grow the money supply. I know that's weird, but the idea is in order to keep inflation in check is you have to come up with a dollar for every dollar's value you of production that's created out there. If you're making something that didn't exist before and you want to sell it and it's the only time you make it, well, you don't have to make new money for that. People can come up with the money somewhere. But if there's constantly new businesses being made and people are making more money than they did before because they're making things that didn't exist before and people are willing to pay for that, you have to grow the money supply. And if Russia decides to stop digging for gold or South Africa stops digging for gold in a year when we're creating a lot of new stuff, we have deflation. There's not enough money to go around, so the value of the money becomes much more valuable and your mortgage starts to really hurt you because your interest rate was set up when there was less deflation. So that's the thing, is that gold is not a good, unless we can control how much gold exists, it's a really bad currency if you want to stay away from inflation or deflation.
It is. And the last country that truly had gold, well, one of the last countries that had true gold-backed currency, and it was across the European continent at the time, was Spain. And they found a tremendous amount of gold in the Western Hemisphere, and they found that tremendous amount of gold and brought it home and said, well, it'll make us really, really wealthy. What it did is it created runaway inflation and caused the Spanish Empire to collapse.
Yeah. Because and so it caused, let's not go there. It caused a lot of the Spanish people that were working for a living throughout their lives, they now had so much gold that they didn't have to work. And this is kind of funny. Look up the historical source for a siesta, and you will find that it's during this period that it became common in Spain, when lots of money was coming in, to just go take a nap in the middle of the day. They went from being very productive and very hungry and go get them and trying to take over the world to fat, dumb, and happy. Because they had so much money come in, but it caused runaway inflation on the gold side. They still had enough gold to make up the difference in Spain. It's just other economies across the countries of Europe collapsed during that time period because the gold that they had was too little f- for the amount of price rises. And we're about at it. We had to play some commercials.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. We can get stuck in history and not be in the present. So if you'd like to talk to us, send us an email question, ask us a question on that you'd expect us to actually answer, you can email us, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. That's Tango, Papa, Whiskey Charlie, or The Personal Wealth Coach. And we'll be back on the other end of these commercials. And welcome back to The Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure, and on with me I have...
Jeff McClure.
And we're going to, I guess we've got a little over 10 minutes left this week before we head into the Christmas week. So 10 minutes of program. Do you have anything that you have to say that might take up 10 minutes of time?
Well, I read some good suggestions. Well, one of the things we didn't talk about is the fact that corporate buybacks broke a record in the last couple of years. What does that mean? That means that corporations spending their excess profits, by the way, are all setting extremely high in the S&P 500 right now. Corporations are buying back their own stock. Now, no organization, no board is going to know the underlying value of a stock more than the corporate board of directors. And they've concluded that the most valuable thing they can do with their excess money right now is to do stock buybacks, to go to the market and buy their own stock. And of course, that raises the price of the stock and it increases their options that they get awarded and all of that. And so they have an incentive to see the price of the stock go up. But the important thing is they could just pay themselves cash. They could pay out dividends as cash, because you could say, well, the stock options, if you increase the price and the stock option goes up, you don't pay tax on that. Well, you do when you exercise the option. And until you exercise the option, you don't have anything. What they've concluded across the board in the United States, the boards of directors are saying our company is worth more than the stock price. Now, that is not an absolute surefire indication that we've got more bull market in front of us, but it is an indication. When you see insiders buying stock rather than selling stock, that is an indication. I realize that Elon Musk has promised to sell 10% of his stock in Tesla. Tesla would probably be an exception. I cannot imagine. The board of directors of Tesla, by the way, is not buying that stock back from him.
Yeah.
Because I strongly suspect they think it may be too high too. It's not to say that I think Tesla is going to crash or anything like that, but it is rather absurdly high. But other stocks, other big companies that are in the S&P 500, the boards of directors are buying their stock back. That is a strong indication this bull market has legs, has more room to run. We're seeing some other things. We're seeing a lot of worry. We talked about that first hour. There's a lot of worry out there in the marketplace, among traders in the market. We saw it this week as the S&P 500 seesawed up and down. Everything they're afraid of isn't much of anything. The President Biden and governors have said, we're not going to do massive shutdowns. That would damage the economy. Is it going to slow the economy, this Omicron outbreak? Probably going to slow things down a bit. But on the other hand, we need things slowed down just a little bit, I think, because we're running a little too hot.
Yeah, I would say by slow down, it's not really that we're going to slow down like recession, but our growth, I think, will not be as fast.
Yeah.
And that's what we saw during the Delta variant, is that we still grew, but it grew a little slower than it had been before. And when you just said that, we're growing too fast. Capacity utilization is something we talked about a lot in 2018 and 2019, that we were growing at a really rapid rate. But that meant that we had to consolidate. We had to stop for a second and fix the things that were breaking and so on. Well, we got a chance to do that, a bigger chance than we expected, to fix all the machines and so on when the pandemic hit. Well, now we're back up at capacity utilization. This is why we're seeing the supply chain issues. We can't get things fast enough. We can't get parts to make the new thing fast enough. Well, that slows down growth. And if it is even harder to get things because there's another wave of sick people in the economy or in other economies, then we should expect that to slow down the growth a bit too. But I still expect to see a lot of good growth in the coming quarter just because of the, number one, the worry in the stock market. Number two, the profitability of the corporations that are hiring people right now. Profits are just way, way up. When we see that start to drop, I would say there's a problem. If prices keep going up when profits are not, we're going to be the first ones to say, hey, there's a problem here. We definitely talk about Tesla in that way. We think Tesla's way, way, way overpriced. There's certainly parts of the market that are way overpriced. At the same time, there's parts of the market that are really underpriced. So just expect a little bit more slowness in the growth. I wouldn't expect a recession, though. That's my expectation. What do you think?
I don't see any recession. Leading economic indicators are pretty much universal. I think there's one exception pointed up right now, indicating that we'll have a better economy in the future than we have presently. The probably the best single indicator out there is the yield curve. It's still steep. It hasn't gone flat. And interestingly enough, just before the pandemic, the yield curve was almost flat. Meaning that the further out 30-year bond was had a yield on it very similar to the 10-year bond, very similar to the 5-year bond. If the yield curve goes flat and starts to invert, which, by the way, it had started to do at the beginning of 2020, then a recession is very likely. And it's ironic. It's certainly ironic. We were calling for a recession for 2 years before 2020. We started calling for it in 2018, saying 2020 we're going to have a recession. We had no idea a pandemic was coming. It's just it was time to have a recession, and we've had the recession. It's over with. It's behind us. The wall of worry is really steep. The yield curve is steep. The leading economic indicators are positive.
Hiring is coming in really, really high. Layoffs are coming in really, really low. All of those are good signs long term. And just because there's a new mutation to the virus, we see some slowed growth there. We're not going to go back to a lockdown. I think we established that during the Delta variant, that we're just not going to shut back down again, which means that people are going to continue to fight to work. And that's a different environment than what we saw in 2019, where there was just show up for work. There are people screaming about don't do lockdowns. Well, what does that mean? They want to work. So even if you disagree with the concept of don't lockdown or not, it's a sign that we can look at to say there are a lot of people that want to keep busy and keep making money, and they're willing to take some risks to do that. And that's what we've demonstrated in the American economy from the beginning. Whether or not it's the right approach, it's working. A lot of people have died, but it's really hard to prove a negative. What would have happened if we'd done it a different way? We don't know. So we can be proud of the successes and still look at the problems that we've had and said, whoa, let's try to do that better. And by that, I mean, let's get vaccinated, guys, and just keep working. How's that? And I know people are like, don't mandate me to vaccinate. There might be something there. Yeah, do your own research. I'm not saying I'm mandating. I am saying that you probably got other vaccines in your life and they probably benefited you. And I think this one will too. So, and it certainly makes the economy run better. That's mine. Now, do you have about a minute for a wrap up for the week? We're about to go into the Christmas season. We're going to do two best of episodes coming up. So this is your last chance to talk to them before next year.
Well, like I just got through saying, the economy is doing well. The market is up rather dramatically this year. It slipped a little bit this week, but that is a very reasonable bobble around. It's good to remember that on last Friday and on this Thursday of this week, on the 16th, the S&P 500 broke records again. We can't break records always and forever. So all in all, I think we're going to see the Christmas season work out well. We're going to see our economy continue to hum along. I think the Omicron thing is going to hit us. It's going to hurt, but I think we'll power through it and come out on the other side, as we said in the newsletter, on top of the world. There's very little question in my mind that we have things going in the right direction and with good momentum, and now it's time to do our end of hour stuff.
Yes. If you would like to talk to us off the air, we actually do that. We're not on the air all the time. It's amazing. We have voicemail waiting locally at
254-947-1111.
Or toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, where you can read our newsletter, look at our philosophy, all our documents for disclosure, all that good stuff. You can listen to our radio program going back lots of years. You can contact us through the contact form there or email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Last but not least is you can go to any of your favorite podcast providers and do a search for TPWC or The Personal Wealth Coach, and we will pop up. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach. Merry Christmas.